All right, welcome back to the CTB show, and today we're back with a very special guest. And if you're a draft junkie like me and Christian, we know that you know this guy. You see him on ESPN, on NFL Live. He is the Mr. NFL Draft Scout, Matt Miller. Matt, how's it going? Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, I feel like this is a yearly tradition now. We got to do this every April right before the draft, so it's great to be back on with you guys.
Hey, you said it, not us. We would love to have you every year. Your insight is great. Had a great time speaking with you last year, and I'm sure that you'll have some great stuff for us again today. So yeah, super pumped to talk to you today. And I know this time of the year is probably super busy, crazy for you, but you excited for the upcoming week?
Yeah, I am. You know, it's wild because what you guys do is awesome, number one. But like, what you guys do is year round. And so for me, it's like, it's very seasonal, you know, like it's a long season. The draft season is long, but it's bittersweet because we go back to like August is really like, you know, when you start diving in. So from August until the end of April is like, you feel like you almost live with these prospects and you watch these games so much and like your whole world is wrapped up in these, you know, for a long time, it's like 50 players and then it expands and you're like, okay, three, four, I think right now I'm at like 500 players. So it's bittersweet because you have this moment of you're so excited to see them get drafted and you're so excited to see where they're going to play next year and like what their careers could be like. But then you're just done with them. You know, it's like you just hand them over to the people who cover the NFL after the draft. So it's kind of sad. And this is the first year, honestly, I've been doing this since 2011. It's my first year where we're 10 days from the draft and I haven't done a whole lot of 2025 work because I know that I'm going to be like, it's going to be like May 6th and I'm going to be depressed because the draft is over and I'm going to like, okay, well, I'll go ahead and start next year because I need something to do.
It's funny because you bring that up and you're always notorious for literally the Monday after the draft weekend, you come out with next year's way too early mock draft. Like I remember that as going back 10 years, like I was a high school kid, even earlier, I would always look for that Matt Miller way too early mock draft. So it's so funny that you brought that up because it's true. Like you have all these prospects that you invest so much time into, and then you just got to really turn the page because you got to prepare for another 500 of them that are going to come up next year.
The good news for you is that May 2nd, I have my first look at 2025 that comes out. So I've done some advanced work. I don't want to lie and pretend like I haven't been watching Will Johnson film. Or like when I was at the Michigan and Ohio State Pro Days, like during like there'd be some downtime and all the like players are there, even guys who aren't draft eligible yet. And I'm like talking to Colston Loveland, the Michigan tight end, just, you know, just getting my hooks in for next year, talking to Will Johnson. Or like when I was at Ohio State, they had two great pass rushers, JTT and then Jack Sawyer. They actually worked out with Michael Hall Jr., the defensive tackle. So it's like I'm back there with my phone, like typing up notes about those guys. So I'm excited about next year. But you know, we have 257 picks between now and then before we can get too excited about 25.
It's never too early. I love that. If you're listening, mark your calendars. Thursday, May 2nd, 2025 early look at the draft courtesy of Mr. Matt Miller. But we'll start with asking you about the prospects that everyone seems to love to talk about, and that's the big stars, especially at the top of the draft. Now, this draft seems a little interesting. I read a ton of mock drafts, and it seems like the consensus right now is that picks 1 through 4 are kind of very, very similar in the four players that are going, with Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels or Drake May, and then Marvin Harrison being 4. And then everyone likes to sort of go with the phrase that, well, this year the draft starts at 5. 5 is the big mystery with Los Angeles. How much truth is there in that sort of feeling leading up to the draft right now?
I think 5 is where the mystery starts, but I would say the draft starts at 3 because like you, I'm working on a mock draft for next week and it will probably have Drake May at number 3 overall. But I maintain there's still a chance that New England trades out. I think there's a chance that someone, whether it be Minnesota or Denver or a surprise team, calls New England and it's like, do you really like, you know, this third quarterback enough? And if I were calling New England, I would have the stats of like, you know, teams that trade up for the third quarterback historically, that doesn't go very well. You know, we're talking like that's Trey Lance territory, right? It's not a great spot to be in. Justin Fields was that guy too. So I think that's kind of the ammo. If you're a team that's trying to trade up and get New England to at least think about it, think twice about it. But yeah, I think 4 at Arizona, it's either Marvin Harrison Jr. or a trade out. 5 with the Chargers. There's a lot of mystery there. There could be Joe Alt, the tackle from Notre Dame. It could be a wide receiver, Malik Nabers, or a trade out. And I think that's what makes this year, like, I don't want to say the top of this draft's going to be boring, because, like, we've all projected Caleb Williams to be the number one overall pick for a year now, right? So it's like, okay, that's going to be kind of a formality. And then Jaden Daniels feels really close to a lock at number 2 overall. And that's like, but then the draft gets fun. And I think that what makes this year exciting for me, even like just as somebody who's going to be like in a hotel room in Detroit watching and working, it's going to be like, what does happen at 3? I would say since 2021, you know, when San Francisco traded up 3 and it was like, is it Trey Lance? Is it Mac Jones? Like, it's been that long since we've had probably that much excitement when a team comes on the clock early. Like, damn, what are they going to do? Because it's just, it's so, I mean, like, we think we know, but anything could happen.
Yeah, I'm going back to what you said just a little bit about the Chargers there. Because for me personally, I always am in love with a team that's just picking outside of the, I don't want to call it the sweet spot, but, you know, LA seems like that team that could really shake up the draft, right? And will they go receiver? Will they go offensive line? Like, that is, I guess, the biggest mystery. Again, you mentioned that trade-out is possible. Like, is at the moment, obviously, we're about 10 days away from the draft, 7 days now, but it depends when you're listening this. But what direction do you have a gut feeling? Like, is it going to be an offensive line? Is it going to be receiver? Because, I mean, it's going to be hard if Nabers is there. They just traded away their weapons. They lost Mike Williams. Like, what is the consensus, at least in the media world? Where are the Chargers leaning towards?
There isn't one. Dude, that's what makes it so fun. There's not a consensus. And it's also, it's interesting because you have Jim Harbaugh returning to the NFL after like a 10-year absence. You have Joe Ortiz, the GM, who's been with the Ravens, but like, this is his first time as a general manager. So we can't even look at like their preferences and say, all right, this is what this team would historically do. Like, you can't do that because they're all new. So I lean toward the offensive line for a couple of reasons. Number one is because it's Jim Harbaugh. They want to run the ball. They want to control the line of scrimmage. He's old school like that. Number two, Rashawn Slater is in the last year of his contract. Rashawn came out red hot. That rookie year was amazing. I think he's taken he's declined since then. I'll say that. Some of it's injury related, because it's the Chargers and their key players are always hurt. But, you know, he has taken a bit of a slide. And so I think if you're there with Joe Alt on the board, you have to at least consider it of, man, do we just take, you know, the left tackle in a draft class that doesn't have a lot of left tackles, that has a lot of right tackles? Do you just take the left tackle at 5 and you move Rashawn Slater to right tackle for a year? And then, you know, you figure that out from there on. You know, maybe you keep him, maybe you don't. But I think that's where I lean, is more toward Joe Alt. But I think if Arizona doesn't trade, I think the Chargers will. I guess we should start there. If Arizona sticks at 4, say, hey, we're taking Marvin Harrison Jr., he'll be our new Larry Fitzgerald, then I think the Chargers get an offer from Minnesota that's too good to say no to for a team that doesn't need a quarterback and really needs just a lot of picks to try to, like you said, wide receiver, offensive line. They really need to revamp their corners. I know they signed Christian Fulton, but like, they need corners pretty badly too. They've got 2 aging pass rushers that they just, you know, reworked their contracts on. The Chargers need picks. They need players.
Man, I could already see Twitter just lighting up on fire. If the Chargers, I mean, it would really surprise me to come away from that top pick not getting a weapon for Justin Herbert after losing Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. But I get it. I mean, offensive line has become so, so important as well. I want to shift to some quarterback talk, though. Everyone knows, especially with this recent surge, not really a recent surge, but the surge that J.J. McCarthy has had through this sort of draft window, becoming now that surefire, almost top 10 pick, where a team like Minnesota or Denver is just really into trading up for him. The top 4 is cemented. We know that those guys are going to go very high, but I feel like after that is where it just becomes a huge mystery. Michael Penix, a lot of people seem to love him. He throws the deep ball great. He's got a ton of arm talent. And then Bo Nix, you know, some people are hot, some people are cold on him. But is there a real possibility that maybe those guys see a slide and we don't see the 5 quarterbacks in round 1 that have kind of just become a norm now in recent years?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. It gets hard when you map it out to find the slide. I think because of Denver at 12, they did nothing. They traded Russell Wilson. Like, they did nothing. They cut Russell Wilson. They did nothing to backstop the quarterback position this year. So Denver at 12 feels like they have to do something. I think the Raiders at 13 are a sneaky team. The Saints at 14 are another team. So it does get hard for me to find that the slide. Like we saw last year with Will Levis, you know, where four quarterbacks go early or three quarterbacks go early, excuse me. And then you're like, okay, the fourth one's coming any time now. And the slide happened because you get into the late teens, 20s, those teams all have quarterbacks. Like those are playoff teams. They're set at quarterback in most years. So this year, I think it's easier to connect the dots and say Bo Nix to Denver because of, you know, Sean Payton, Michael Penix to the Raiders because they, you know, want somebody with the arm strength to work down the field. It's easier to connect those dots and say, I feel really strongly that five quarterbacks will go. I wouldn't be surprised if six go, but man, I'm with you. Like, and I feel like we fall into the trap every year since Lamar Jackson, you know, we're like, oh, someone will trade back in to get the fifth year option. Like Lamar's the only time that has happened where a team has traded back in to get that fifth year option. You know, even last year, Levis was picked 33. The Titans tried getting back into the first round. They couldn't do it. So they didn't get that extra year on Will Levis. So it's funny how much we get caught up in, I don't want to call it groupthink, but almost narratives of, okay, the fifth and sixth quarterback this year, someone will trade back in to get them. Like who? Who wants to give up that capital? You know, like the Rams or the, you know, the Giants maybe, but those are teams that are picking in the 40s. That's an expensive trade up to get a quarterback that you didn't like enough to just draft when you were originally on the board is the other side of it. If you like the guy enough to give up that capital in the trade back, you might as well just take them when you're on the clock originally.
Yeah, I'm notorious for that too. When I'm building my mock drafts, I always try and fit a quarterback into like the back of the first because I'm trying to convince myself that somebody is going to move up because they value that fifth year option. But you're right. Like if you look back at it, doesn't necessarily happen as often as many people talk about it. Right. And one thing that does happen often though, is a sort of wide receiver frenzy. As soon as one goes, it's just a complete domino effect. Right. And I mean, you look at the top three are cemented, right? They might all go in the top 10, but that fourth receiver off the board is so interesting to me because we've seen in recent years how much a good 40 time can just absolutely blow up the status of a prospect, right? And I'm not going to sit here and say Xavier Worthy is just a fast receiver because everybody that knows him is like knows that that's just not true, right? The guy can play. He's fast, but he can do everything else. And is it too silly to say that he could, because of that 40 time, be the fourth receiver off the board over guys like A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr., who is also a speedster in himself?
I think our guy Mel Kiper Jr. just had a mock draft where Worthy was his fourth receiver off the board. So I don't think it's crazy to say at all. I mean, and it's funny, like you do this long enough and you've seen everything, right? It's like John Ross was one pick before Patrick Mahomes. So like, yeah, teams are going to value speed. You know, Henry Ruggs was drafted. He was the first receiver in his draft class. You know, like we've seen teams reach for speed. And I do think with Worthy, it's not the huge reach because he is a well-rounded wide receiver. He had 3 years of production at Texas. He's a good route runner. He's a great punt returner. He brings a lot more to the table than just that speed. So no, it's definitely not crazy to think that, especially I feel like a wide receiver, it falls so much to like scheme fit. Even with the top three guys, it's like, okay, well, like, you know, what does your team need? If you need, you know, inside speed, you're going to like Malik Nabers. You're going to like Xavier Worthy. If you like, you need a physical X receiver, you're going to want Rome Odunze or Adonai Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr. So it definitely does come down to preference and fit a little bit to where I'm trying to think off the top of my head, like if the Colts took Xavier Worthy at 15 as the fourth wide receiver off the board, I wouldn't be shocked because they need that. They have Michael Pittman Jr. They have Josh Downs. And you're telling me now, like, hey, let's add the fastest player in combine history to go catch bombs from Anthony Richardson. Yeah, that's a pretty damn good pick. Like, you can't really nitpick that and be like, well, he's my sixth receiver or he's my, you know, seventh receiver. And they took him here. Like, no, the fit would make so much sense. It, despite the fact, like you said, Brian Thomas ran a 4.33. Adonai Mitchell ran a 4.34. And they're over 200 pounds. Like, those dudes are not slow by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I want to circle back a little bit to the Broncos when you mentioned them earlier and the fact that they really just did nothing at the league's most important position.
Nothing at
all. Like they're entering next season with Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci is the two quarterbacks on their roster. Not only is that a tough sell to a locker room, that's a tough sell to a fan base. So they're sitting in a spot at 13 And I think another part of this story that makes it fascinating is the fact that Sean Payton is their head coach. He's not a guy who I feel wants to sit around for a rebuild and enter another year where they don't have much hope. Like, what is their plan? Because to me, and again, this is just strictly for me looking at mock drafts a lot, is it seems like a lot of the times the consensus is either a Quinyon Mitchell or a Brock Bowers, strictly just like they're going to take the best player available, and then it's just anyone's guess who is going to be under center next year.
You know, man, I've said Ben DiNucci's name more times in the last 2 weeks than I have in the previous 40 years of my life, because I keep saying the same thing as you, of like, what the hell are they doing? You know, and it almost feels like Sean Payton is almost just trying to hit the reset button, you know, and like we saw them flip over the offensive line. Jerry Jeudy's gone now to the Cleveland Browns. It's like they've done so many things to reset this roster except at quarterback. And the craziest thing to me is you guys, you saw it, like every team in the NFL added or like subtracted and added at quarterback. I mean, every team, like Kenny Pickett gets traded, you know, where like Desmond Ridder's on the move. Like everyone is shuffling seats except for Denver. They didn't do anything. Like Carson Wentz is a backup quarterback in Kansas City right now. You tell me he's not a better quarterback than Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci. Like, why didn't you get involved out here somewhere? Like, make a move for Sam Howell, for Christ's sake. Like, do something. And they did nothing. And so to me, that's where I look at Denver. Pick 12 is way too early based on ranking for Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr. But, like, they haven't done anything else. And so that does make me, like, question. Does Sean Payton just love one of these guys? And he knows, okay, no one else is going to draft them ahead of me. They're perfect for me. I love them. Like, to hell with where people have them ranked. I'm going to draft them. This is going to be my quarterback, because like they got to do something, and they don't have the capital to make that big trade up because they traded a second round pick for Sean Payton. So they don't have the ammo unless you're going to dip into like 2025 and 2026 first rounders to move up. And even then, Minnesota can offer a better package than you because they're one pick ahead of you and they have a second first round pick this year. So it's like the Broncos are, like we were talking earlier, like the pivot points in the draft, or like the draft starts at this point, like 12, we're all going to have to just stop for a second when they come on the clock and be like, all right, what are they doing here? Because they could go corner, they could go wide receiver, they could go offensive tackle, because Garrett Bowles is in a contract here. But like, who the hell is going to throw the ball is the biggest question.
Yeah. You mentioned how pick number 12, like that's a pretty high draft pick, right? And every single year you see big risers and you see big fallers. And obviously with the consensus board, if Penix Jr. or Bo Nix happen to get picked 12th overall, that'd be considered one of the biggest risers on draft night. Like at the moment, who would you sort of say could be one of those big risers, and who could be victim to like a Will Levis type fall and be one of the guys that you don't necessarily see fall, but it could be a result and just like offensive lines going, quarterbacks going, or receivers going? Who could that guy be?
Yeah, I think of the fallers, I would say Latu, the DN from UCLA, just because the medical history. You know, he had to medically retire when he was at Washington, went to UCLA and was amazing the last 2 years. So it's not anything like against him as a player. He's a great player. He's in my top 20 overall, I think. He's right there at 20. But the medicals could be the reason that he falls. I tell you, man, like talking to teams over the weekend, the two names I heard the most of guys that, you know, you send your big board to people and they're like, hey, you're too low on this guy, you're too low on this guy. Graham Barton, the lineman from Duke, was one I heard all the time of like, you're too low on this guy, you're too low on this guy. And then Byron Murphy, the D tackle from Texas, which I have him at 13 overall. I'm really high on him, but he was the one guy where there's one particular scout who works in the AFC East, and he's like, that's his guy. And he's like, we're never going to get him now because he's just going to go too early. So Byron Mitchell is another one where I think he probably goes in the top 15. Graham Barton, I think his, not so much that he's going to go like 12 or 13 or anything like that, but he's definitely jumped some guys. Like maybe he's jumped to Marius Mims. He jumped Tyler Guyton. So I think he's a player that's going to go ahead of some of the names that became, like you said, consensus big board guys. You see mock drafts, they're always in the late teens, early 20s. Barton's got a shot to go ahead of them now.
Like that Barton shot a lot. I've sort of looked into him recently for a couple of the mid-teens for landing spots, and I like what I see with him, so that's a great shout there. Last year when you came on our show, we asked you about a prospect that maybe, you know, doesn't even have to be a first-rounder, but someone that you were really high on, and you talked very highly about Roschon Johnson, and you said that If it weren't for Bijan Robinson getting all the love there out of Texas, that he would be very high on a lot of people's radars. And I went with that. I drafted him in fantasy last year. First couple weeks, loved what I saw. I was like, it's going to be his backfield in Chicago. And then, you know, injuries played a role. But I want to go back to this question because I loved the Roschon Johnson love last year. Who is it this year that no one's talking about? Maybe he goes on day two, maybe even goes on day three. That is going to be a big name in the NFL one day.
Man, Javon Baker, wide receiver from UCF. And I think he probably goes in round three, maybe round four, but probably round three. He was an Alabama kid who got lost in the shuffle, transferred to UCF. Watching his tape, I was blown away by just how well he controls his body, how well he tracks the ball, doesn't have a lot of drops, really good route runner. He's physical, not like a burst, certainly fast enough. And then I got to see him in person at the Senior Bowl. And he's one of my guys in this class for sure. And I think in this wide receiver group, we talk so much about the guys who are going to go in the first round and even, you know, second round guys. I think I had 19 receivers in my top 100 overall. So it's a loaded group at the top. So some people are going to get lost in the shuffle. I think he's one of those. We're in a more conventional draft class. He probably gets a little more buzz as a, you know, a top 10 type wide receiver, but he just kind of got lost in the mix this year of the hype around the first rounders. But that's a dude who I don't want to say he could be like a Puka Nacua, because Puka was, I mean, that's record type rookie season, but they do remind me of each other, where you see someone in third, fourth round that's just understands how to play wide receiver at a really high level.
I hope my dynasty league mates don't watch this podcast, because now I'm going to have him on my radar as a potential sneaky undrafted free agent. But I mean, again,
dude, that's
Matt,
what gets me, like all my, like, so I host some fantasy leagues for charity, and I know like those guys all understand like, oh, here's his ranking. So it's like, I'm getting just completely sniped in fantasy every year when it comes, especially dynasty drafts, because it's like, oh well, this is easy to know who Matt's gonna take. So I get you on that. It's tough.
That's the best part about, you know, we do this together and we're under the name on Instagram. It's just Catch the Blitz. So sometimes we won't put our names behind things, particularly fantasy, because I know my league mates follow. And if they send it to me, be like, this is your ranking, I'll just be like, no, it's Christian. It's not mine. You got to keep your strategy in house, you know?
That's a good idea. Yeah. I got to do something, or like block those guys from my Instagram or something.
Yeah, I don't hesitate to block my friends too. I'll put my name on stuff, but I'll block them straight up. If I'm posting something fantasy related, they are not seeing it until after our draft, because I have my guys that I'm always targeting. And last year, like you mentioned, we both went out and got Roschon Johnson, and Roschon Johnson was awesome. Like, I mean, I still think he's going to be incredible in that backfield now as a duo, but I mean, look, it's always a pleasure having you on. Like you alluded to before, this is something that we enjoy, and it's glad to see that you enjoy it too, right? If we can make it a yearly tradition, heck, let's do it. This is awesome. I think it's honestly one of the most exciting times of the year is just the NFL draft and getting to talk to you directly. It's super, super cool. So as always, I really appreciate it. I know Thomas does as well. You're busy during this time, and the fact that you're able to give us a good chunk of it on like we said, 10 days before the draft, 9 days before the draft, it's very, very appreciative, and we both appreciate you a ton.
Yeah, no, you guys are great. I love following the account. You help keep me up to date on what's going on. So that's also very much appreciated. So next year, you guys got to come to Green Bay. You would fit in Green Bay. Like, I feel like
I've been to Green Bay once.
Of the United States. So
it's,
you guys,
it's a great little town.
Yeah. I'm for it. We even tried, you know what? We tried to get out to the NFL Combine this year, but it just didn't work out. We tried to get media passes. We actually were, the Senior Bowl had reached out to us, and they said that we should come down. But again, we didn't expect for them to sort of send us an email, so we didn't do it. But next year, hopefully we'll be at the Senior Bowl. Hopefully one day we'll be at the Combine too. But it would be nice to maybe do an in-person podcast one of these days. But that would be awesome.
Mobile, Alabama might be culture shock for you guys. I want to be there. I'll give you a ride from the airport. I want to be there for that moment. And I've been to like 15 Senior Bowls. I'm like the unofficial mayor of Mobile. So I'd be happy to show you guys around. And I just want to see you eat like crawfish and stuff. Like, I think that would be great content.
We just had Marlon Humphrey on the show, was it last week? And he's from Alabama, grew up there. And he was telling, because, you know, he spent a lot of time in Toronto, he was telling us about how different it is from there. So, I mean, it's one thing to hear about it. It's another thing for you to show us the ropes. So I really look forward to that day hopefully happening. Matt, pleasure as always. We wish you a great week ahead covering the draft, and we'll definitely be tuned into to the Twitter account for sure for the latest updates, the latest mock drafts, and of course that May 2nd, 2025.
There we go.
Way too early rankings, because it is never too early. It's always great speaking with you. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet, guys. Thanks.